you guys. It's Sunday.
Yeah. We're talking about that fucking Night of Living Dead, the 2000 one.
No, 1990.
Or 1991.
The remake. Yeah, we actually, because if you were here Friday or whenever the hell we were last streaming, I was talking about when before we went to Halloween Kills, we were at the mall across the street, and we went in FYE, and they always had that big bin in the front that has all those movies for cheap, and then they had, like, a big horror one, too, and they were selling stuff off for, like, $5, and so they had the Night of the Living Dead from 1990, and I was kind of like, oh, man, I remember this actually being pretty good, and I hadn't seen it for a long time, so we decided to pick it up for cheap, and then I was kind of in the mood to watch it last night, so we rewatched it, and it's actually, I remember it being good, like, when I saw it, I think I might have seen it in the theater back in 1990, it's actually, like, better than I remembered.
Yeah, I remember liking it, but I'd forgotten everything about it. I forgot that Tony Todd was starring it. He was Ben.
Yeah.
And he did a great job as Ben. There was, they were doing the kind of retro 1960s acting, like, right out of Night of the Living Dead. Now, they did make some changes to the script, but they wanted to kind of make it a little fresh, so it's not like you're watching the exact same movie. Yeah.
Although it's way closer to the original than I had remembered. And the thing about it, what ended up happening, and in case you guys didn't know, because David June said, wait, a 1990 remake, I've not seen this. Yeah. What ended up happening was that, obviously, I think a lot of people know, like, the original George Romero, Night of the Living Dead from 1968, there were all these kind of, like, copyright issues, there were, you know, paperwork fuck-ups and everything like that, so they lost the copyright on it. So kind of like George Romero and all the crew and stuff like that didn't really get a lot of money out of it, even though it kind of became a cult classic later on. So what they were afraid, like when the 90s, or the late 80s kind of came about, they sort of, George Romero and his kind of production company, they sort of got wind that a lot of other production companies were maybe like kind of interested in doing a remake of Night of the Living Dead. And because he didn't no longer had the copyright on it, he wasn't going to get anything for it. So he decided to go through his own production company and raise the money and make one themselves to kind of like, so they'd be like, hey, this is our movie. You know what I mean? You can't just like make it out of the fucking, I mean, they could legally.
The first one was, it was public domain.
Yeah.
They fucked up the paperwork.
Yeah.
You could play it anywhere.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but there were whole fucking theaters, ghetto theaters, that made a fucking living off of fucking showing Night of the Living Dead fucking at midnight on the weekends. And when I was growing up in California, our local television stations, it might have been Channel 13, I think it was KTTV, they would play Night of the Living Dead. And the first time I saw it, I must have been about six. I think it was 1976. No, it was probably about 1976, 1977. So I'd have been about eight, maybe nine, something. Seven, eight, nine, around that time. And I woke up early to see the cartoons. All right. But it was way early. I didn't know what time it was. I couldn't, read a clock, I guess. I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember not really knowing what time it was. It was just the sun hadn't come up yet and turned it on. And there was this fucking black and white movie that was intriguing. It started pulling me in. And I didn't know it was Night of the Living Dead, but that's exactly what it was. And when they, remember the first thing when they get into that damn house and you see the skull and the blood and like that? That's when I knew I was in for trouble. That fucking movie sucked me in. And it just, it fucking scared the shit out of me. And I fucking loved it. And then it was over. They did like a little quick like national anthem thing, and then in California the cartoons start right up.
Happy nightmares. Here's the zombies.
Here comes
now.
The cartoons, yeah.
Here's Bugs Bunny.
I think it must have been Saturday morning cartoons or something.
So that was like the really, really late Friday.
Really late show. So I must have woke up around 3 a.m. or something, 3 or 4 in the morning, and fucking they had just started putting on because it was free. So I guess those dudes running the damn local TV stations is that putting Night of the Living Dead on. Because there'd be shit that'd come on in those California after hours in the local California television stations. Wouldn't be even it wasn't even announced in the TV guide.
Yeah.
They just put some well, you could do it with Night of the Living Dead because it was public domain.
Yeah.
And, you didn't have to pay anybody. Well, there was a whole bunch of ghetto theaters that in the middle of the night would play fucking Night of the Living Dead. And if you're outside the United States and you weren't black, you didn't know that fucking most black kids grew up watching Night of the Living Dead back in the 70s because it had a fucking African American star.
Which was very rare, but yeah. Very unusual.
Yeah, and a ghetto theater back in the 70s didn't care how old you were, so they were little kids, fucking 9, 10, 11, going in there.
Woo-hoo, zombies!
Yeah, you know what I mean? I've heard whole stories about it, you know, from old podcasters or people that, you know, from my generation that grew up and saw those things bootleg in a local ghetto theater at fucking midnight.
Well, there's a documentary, I think it's still on Shudder, called Horror Noir, which is kind of about, you know, black horror history. And a lot of them, like, tell that story that Night of the Living Dead was one of their big, that was one of the big things, like, in the late 60s, early 70s, that would play at, like, midnight movie theaters, like, in these, really, like, you know, kind of, in just, like, really cheap theaters.
It was a movie of its time, but in many ways, it was ahead of its time, and a lot of that by accident. It was underground. Movie making, fucking super bad budget, high creativity level, and the script didn't really have any, you know, the script didn't make any mentions of people's race or anything, just the best actor they had got the lead, he happened to be black, and that threw a whole new dynamic on this movie, which in the 60s played fucking super well. Now you take it for granted, but in the 60s it was just off the chart.
Yeah, it was like a big deal. Even though they weren't really like thinking about it, I don't think. Like George Romero wasn't thinking about it.
He just put his best actor in that role.
Yeah, who was Dwayne Jones, by the way, who, fun fact, would go on to direct movies of his own, such as Ganja and Hess, which I think is also on Shudder.
He was a theater teacher, I think, at the time.
I think he
got the job.
Yeah.
And he was probably coaching the other actors, too, while they were making the movie, you know. But they were just having a good time. And that movie, the original, really was the blueprint for survival horror. And it was felt like you were watching a newsreel. And you felt like you were watching real people in a fucking weird situation. They don't know what the hell's going on. The TV's telling them one thing. They're seeing something else. And then eventually the TV fesses up and says, "We believe that the dead are returning to life and attacking the living." Just all kind of, and then they're like, yeah, we knew that.
Well, I mean, but, admittedly, you would really have to like get confirmation of that before you reported it to everybody. You know what I mean? Because it sounds like unbelievable. You know?
It's, if you haven't seen the original, you must see the original.
I mean, just, and you can see it everywhere because, like I said, it's free. There's no copyright on it, so it's like everywhere has got it.
Right. And what made the movie great is that all the characters made sense. They were kind of based on people you would actually know or run into. And if you've ever been in an emergency situation or basic training, like the asshole down in the bunker, there are dudes like that. And they don't make it because they're so scared they can't fucking listen, and they're blaming everybody else for fucking little, and they won't do anything. They're just frozen with terror, and then they get hostile and don't want to cooperate. You'll see that. All the personality types are fucking presented in the original, all right? And then fucking Ben is just your average dude who's reasonable, trying to get through this situation. He's protecting this woman who's lost her mind. She's totally helpless. She snaps out of it a little bit, but she ends up getting killed. And then there's reasonable people and unreasonable people and a young guy that helps him out. And it was just a good story about bravery and cowardice, really, is what it was about. And Ben happened to be the hero. And you, at the end, you think there's maybe hope, but no. There's no hope. And how it ends in the original, Ben gets mistaken for a zombie by a fucking, basically a lynch mob or a militia of zombie killers, and they just fucking shoot him in the head from a long distance, and then later on they go in there and get him with a damn bail hook and fucking drag him out and burn him like he's a zombie, which sucks the air right out of the damn movie. Like, oh man, it was fucking, the shit was all for nothing, you know, which played real well in the 60s because, you know, they had the whole Mississippi burning thing going on, and there was a time of turmoil. So the fucking militia lynch mob type thing was like part of the damn riot culture that was going on at the time. It was just a very much a 60s movie, but it's timeless. It's timeless. And it's fucking, you know, today with all the trouble going on right now, it actually kind of still resonates. So when they did this one, when they rebooted it in fucking 1990, all right, I was in the Army, so I didn't see it. I saw it later and forgot about it. And I forgot that Tony Todd was in it. They did a perfect casting when it came to putting Tony Todd in there as Ben. He's a great Ben. He's a slightly different Ben, but it's him because it ends a little bit differently. But And Barbara is a little bit different. I don't agree with everything they did in this movie. I think they should have included the television as a character, because in the original, the television is a character. The television is telling you what the hell's going on, and it's kind of painting, it's putting this movie in its universe. It's painting the universe out. And there is a television in this, but its role has been diminished. That's the main thing I disagree with. And I think there was something good about having Barbara basically a helpless invalid and for most of the movie, because it put a lot of pressure on Ben to try to help her. So she was a burden at first. She never really got out of it. Now, some people say that wouldn't fly today, you know what I mean, with the way women's roles are. But the thing is that movie had other strong women in it. It's just that Barbara was kind of the helpless one. Other than that, I think this movie knocked it out of the park. I liked it.
I mean, this is very similar. And I will note, too, in case you didn't know, that George Romero actually did write the screenplay for this as well.
Yeah.
So it's based on his original screenplay. He just changed a couple things. Yeah. And he brought in, he was initially, like, Tom Savini came in to do the effects. But then George Romero, obviously George Romero and Tom Savini had worked together a lot previously. And so George Romero was like, why don't you just direct it, Tom Savini? So Tom Savini said, sure, I'd be glad to. Problem is that the producers that they had, who were like giving them the money, like the backers, they didn't like a lot of the ideas. So Tom Savini came out later and said that maybe 40% of what I wanted in this movie like came out the way I wanted.
Which movie are you talking about?
The 1990 one.
Okay.
The one that Tom Savini directed.
Okay.
Tom Savini didn't work on the initial
first
one
was Romero, I think, right? Yeah.
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 So he's like, so maybe, and George Romero, like, for whatever reason, like he wasn't, on set a lot of the time for the 1991, even though he did write the screenplay. But, so Tom Savini had a lot of kind of clashes with the producers who didn't want to do certain things, but honestly, even despite that, I think this came out actually really good. And normally I'm not a huge fan of remakes. I don't shit on them like just out of the gate, because it's like, you know, there have been good ones, obviously. You know, and I think that this was actually one of the better ones. And watching it again last night, it was actually way better than I remembered.
Yeah,
and what's interesting too, I think because I remembered Tom Savini directing it, so I think knowing that in my mind, I remembered it being much gorier than it was, but it's actually hardly gory at all. And then when I was reading about it, Tom Savini was like, well, I didn't really want to make it over the top gory. He's like, yeah, I know that's what I'm known for. But he's like, I felt like in respect to the original, which wasn't really all that gory, he kind of wanted to go more like the old one, like more of the tone of the old one. So he didn't want to make it like this over the top splatter fest.
Yeah, it feels like the 60s. It feels like it's placed in the 60s, but I don't really think it is. I think it's supposed to be the 90s.
Yeah, it's supposed to be contemporary. It's supposed to be
90s, yeah. But it does have a 60s style, a 60s feel to it. It feels like the original. I kind of want to say this is Tony Todd's best movie. It's his best role, I think.
It's hard to say between that and Candyman.
I'm going to say that, I don't know, man. I think this might be...
He's really good in this.
He's got a bigger part in it. He really does, I think, capture the character of Ben. That's Ben. He doesn't put a big twist on it. And when he does Ben, he does a lot of the same acting kind of foibles and imperfections that were in the original actor that played Ben. He's doing like a, I don't want to say it's a Ben impression. It's just like he's channeling that character.
Yeah, even it's like an homage, but he's kind of putting his own spin on it,
yeah,
too.
Even the way he's delivering lines, because the original actor, a lot of what he was doing was ad-libbed, and he was trying to find the words to for the situation. And Todd does the same thing. It's kind of like him kind of stumbling over, fumbling on a line and trying to save it. It's good. It's like watching the original Ben. I think he did a great job.
I really liked all the actors in this. Interestingly, yep. Patricia Tallman, who plays Barbara, which is probably like the biggest change
from
this movie to from the original, she was in some other stuff. I think she was in Babylon 5 or something like that. She's mostly known for being a stunt performer. So I think this was kind of like, as far as acting goes, this might have been like one of her bigger roles.
That's where I've seen her before. I was trying to place her. She was on Babylon 5.
And I think she was in some Star Trek as well, like on some Star Trek. But like I said, most of her career is like stunt work. Yeah. She's a stunt person.
Yeah, she's a very different version of Barbara. better looking, a lot more athletic and heroic.
Well, they do
kind of a break from the original.
Yeah, well, like I said, at this point, you know, we'd had like all the horror movies, slasher movies, and stuff like that from the 80s, and the whole Final Girl thing was just very established. So I kind of feel like maybe they wanted to go more in that direction because that was something that was, you know, and I think that some even horror fans had complained about for a long time about Barbara from the original 1968 one, how she just kind of like sat there and didn't do anything. It was like useless.
Yeah.
Which like you said, you could see you liked her being useless because one, there were other women in the movie that weren't useless.
Yeah.
And two, you know, like you said, it put more pressure on Ben to like protect her because she clearly
lost her mind
because she saw her, because she saw her brother get killed. So you can understand it. What they did with this one is that Barbara starts out like that. Like, she gets to the house and she doesn't talk for like a long time because she's in shock, as you would be if you saw like dead people get up and start walking around and killing people that you love. But she like, you know, about 10, 15 minutes in, she kind of snaps out of it and like starts taking care of shit. So she has more of a heroic thing, and they end it differently too, even though kind of the outcome of it is sort of similar, but they give her more of like a final girl type of thing.
Yeah.
Which, like, I kind of like that. I mean, I like that they, you know, the movie is very, very close to the original. Like I said, it's still a George Romero script. They didn't change a shit ton of stuff. And, but I do like that they made that change to it. Because if they just made the same thing, you know what's ironic? When this first came out in 1990, a lot of critics didn't like it because they thought, well, it's just like the original, so why bother?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it, just like a lot of things, as time went on, you know, critical reappraisal, and it got, like, a lot more.
This one aged real well.
It did, actually. And like I said, I hadn't seen it for a very long time, and rewatching it, I was like, wow, this is actually, like, way better than I remembered it being.
It's still good. The reason why I didn't like the new Barbara that much is because in the original, there was... The movie was set up, a lot of it was two stories of two different guys on doing two different power plays. You had the married white guy,
Cooper,
who was down in the basement, hunkered down, and he was trying to protect his wife and family, but not really in a good way. It's kind of like toxic masculinity. He's kind of like the dude from The Hand. All right.
Yeah, that dude is a giant fucking
tangle. Douche. He's real abusive. He's abusive towards a damn woman that he's trying to protect.
Yeah, he smacks her in the face.
Yeah,
at one point.
And then he's fucking won't help. He won't help them fortify the upper floors. He's not making any long term plans about escaping in case the fucking zombies get in the house. There's no way out of the basement. Ben is right. At least you got a second floor, which they don't get into the second floor in this movie. As much. In the first movie, remember, the second floor played a big role. They went up there and they were throwing firebombs off. And so there was a little bit, there was a tactical advantage to having a second floor. So Ben was more right. You had a way to get out.
Yeah, because there were more than one. There was more than one exit.
Right. Now, Ben, he's kind of, he's not protecting his family. He's protecting himself and an adopted family, which is Barbara. Barbara's kind of like a child in a way. She's mentally fucked up. She can't do anything. You know what I mean?
So in the original.
In the original. So she's totally helpless. And he's trying to reason with her and he's trying to be the leader. A young white guy and his girlfriend join him and then to fortify the place. Later on, what's his name? Cooper?
Yeah,
Cooper's
the
wife.
The jackal.
Cooper's wife calls him out. You're an asshole and agrees with Ben. Now, this great scene in the original, all right, which was even more powerful in the fucking 60s, Ben beats the shit out of Cooper. All right, so you had
justifiably so, because man, that dude was such a fucking douche.
Which that goes...
He's going to get everybody killed.
Yeah, and that goes to the whole survival horror angle. What society says is right and wrong does not fucking matter in a survival situation. It's what is correct tactically. And Ben was correct. He had to fucking beat Cooper's fucking ass to get shit done. If not, he was going to get his party killed. And really, on those kind of dynamics is what made the survival horror genre and the whole Walking Dead thing. Came from shit like that. And in the 1990 remake, they have some of that, or they did play on that, but that original formula wasn't there. And I kind of missed it. But I do agree. It may have not have been wise to totally redo that first story. Why remake that movie if you're going to make it exactly the same? So I kind of see that argument. Because the fans get two versions. Okay. And everybody has two versions. You can watch both these movies. So it's not like that story was untold. It was told.
Yeah.
They just retold it and they omitted certain things. My main gripe was the television.
Well, see, my argument was, so in the original, like you said, the TV provided a lot of, like, exposition
and
of, like, what was going on, world building and stuff, what was going on outside of the world of this one farmhouse.
Yeah.
In 1990, they do find a TV upstairs, and they do kind of, they plug it in, and then there's, like, a, one of those, what do you call it, like the emergency broadcast system type of thing. And it's telling you it's there for a couple of minutes. And then they're just kind of like, okay, well, whatever. But they don't know exactly what's going on yet. And then Cooper, like the douchebag that he is, later, he kind of sneaks upstairs while everybody's trying to fortify the house and tries to take the TV and, like, tries to take it down to the basement. Or, you don't know if that's what he's doing, but that's what it looks like he's doing. And so then Ben catches him and they get into like this big scuffle and the TV ends up like falling down the basement stairs and getting broken. Now, I would argue, like, I see what you're saying. Like, I like that you like that whole thing with the TV and that is like a really cool part of the original. But I would argue that because most people have seen the original and in 1990, everybody knew what a zombie was. Everybody knew... everybody knew that dead people were walking around. So I would argue that maybe it was kind of like a waste of time to take time out of the movie to say, oh, the dead are coming back to life. So everybody knows that in 1990. Even in the context of the movie, they don't know that in the context of the movie, but audiences now.
Well, the reason why I liked it in the original version is because it's not only the world building, it's also kind of like a truism that you learn. Through the television, you learn that the media and the government don't know what the fuck's going on, don't believe the truth, and then later on it shows the military and the government complex trying to hide the truth, remember? They don't really want to talk about the satellite and the radiation because they're afraid that maybe they're responsible. It takes them a while to finally that they're forced to admit that the fucking dead are coming back to life, and they may have had something to do with it. And I liked that. Yeah, I liked that element that they showed the leadership in chaos, and they showed the leadership lying and trying to be evasive about it, not wanting to talk. And I just thought that was great because that's what when a society is unraveling, that's what you see, and that's what happened. Shit, that's 1990 brings me back to the fucking first Gulf War. And fucking everything Saddam Hussein's minister of fucking truth and minister of propaganda, they are definitely saying the exact opposite of what is true. You're all safe, don't worry. The Americans are all dead out in the sands. Just that kind of shit, So I just thought those were great touches. And it was because people in the 60s were used to that. They were being lied to and they all knew it.
Yeah,
Vietnam War and fucking and a lot of those fucking riots and shit, they were fucking lying on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to, comment on some of the stuff that was up here. But, Tom Savini actually did want to work on the original film, but obviously he was in Vietnam at that time. That was 1968. Mike Barrett says, the original Barbara is pretty much comatose for the whole movie. Yeah, pretty much. It's just kind of like, finally, she snaps out of it, like, near the end and comes and tries to help them, like, put the doors up. And then...
gets killed.
When she sees her zombified brother, she flips out again and gets eaten.
Which I thought that was great. I thought that was great because it added to the sense of hopelessness for certain people.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody still gets killed in the shit, but
some die later.
Shit's buffering.
Some die later. That's the only difference. They all died.
Yeah.
Just some died earlier and some died later.
David June is asking, where can you watch this? Actually, I'm not sure. We just ended up watching it because I bought it at FYE.
Bought a hard copy.
And but you can probably... I imagine it might be on Tubi or somewhere like that. Just like put in Night of the Living Dead 1990 or Night of the Living Dead Tom Savini.
Yeah. It's out there. You'll like it.
And then David June says, the best Barbara is Shaun of the Dead Barbara. And then he said, this is funny. Oh, and I wanted to mention this too. Yeah, Bill Moseley... who has been in a shit ton of fucking horror movies, most recently in all the Rob Zombie ones. He played Barbara's brother in this 1991. Although he gets killed, like, immediately. Yeah. And then he's sort of like, and he doesn't even come back to the house as a zombie, does he? I think that Barbara, after she kind of escapes from the house, she sees his dead body, like, in the back of a truck or something.
Yeah.
So she doesn't get killed. So, spoiler alert, she actually doesn't get killed at the end. Everyone else does. But, maybe on Shudder. I think the original is on Shudder, but I don't think that the remake is on Shudder. It might be on Tubi, though, because Tubi tends to have stuff like this. I don't know. It might be hard to get. I should have checked, like, where it was streaming. I guess I didn't really think about it because we just bought the DVD. Like, and just watched it on that. Was there any extras on that?
But we didn't see them.
Oh, okay. We didn't know if there was any extras on there.
You were tired, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I can't.
Yeah, there are special features on awake. It.
Yeah, we'll have to watch
those.
But
we got the DVD version, and it was only $5.
Yeah.
We watched it on my Xbox 360 on a big fucking HD fucking TV. It looks great. You don't need a Blu-ray for it. It looks good.
No, not really. I mean, like I said, it's not like it's some big, like, cinematic.
No.
Anything like that. And honestly,
it's a retro flick. I think if you've seen it in real ultra HD, you just the special effects probably wouldn't have looked as good.
Although, as I said, considering that Tom Savini worked on this and directed it, it's not as gory as you might think.
No.
You see a lot of gunshots and stuff like that, but it's not anything like, you know, it's nothing like people getting scalped or beheaded or anything like that. Like some of his other, because, you know, Tom Savini did a lot of, shit with George Romero, like Dawn of the Dead and stuff.
You see a lot of The Walking Dead in it now.
Yeah.
You see where The Walking Dead got a lot of inspiration from, well, all the zombie movies, but this one too.
Yeah.
The tone.
But yeah, I mean, I honestly, like I said, you can kind of, I don't know. You could, like, argue all day long about, you know, Barbara and the original and Barbara and this one. I kind of like that, like I said, they almost went two ways with it. Because Barbara, at first, at the beginning of this movie, she is kind of like the Barbara from the original. Because, like I said, she's clearly in shock and she's not really talking at first. Like, she doesn't really know what's going on. Like, she's shell-shocked, sort of. But then she, you know, she actually starts talking and starts, like, contributing shit, like, yeah. You know, she's the one that looks out the window and says, hey, look how slow they are. We could just walk past them.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is like, are you nuts? We're just, like, fucking staying in here. And so, and she's also the one that calls out, like, all the arguing between the dudes. Because, like, they're not getting anything done because, yeah, telling them they're acting like two-year-olds.
Yeah, well, that was Cooper's fault.
Well, yeah, that didn't have anything to do with Ben, because, like you said, Ben was right. I wouldn't want to, like,
go down in the damn basement,
because, like I said, the zombies get in there, you're fucked. Where are you going to go?
Yeah, now Ben got forced down into the basement later, because everybody got killed, because old boy wouldn't help him fuck secure the place. Had they got him to secure the place early, and had they found the damn key to the fuel, it would have been a different story, remember? But the key to the fuel was down there in the basement with fucking Cooper.
With that douchebag.
He probably knew it was there. Because it was just hanging there.
Well, see, that was the implication, because I kind of feel like I said, just in the original movie, Ben does eventually get forced out of the cellar, whether he wanted to or not. But, yeah, in this version, I don't think that was in the original version where there was, like, that's where the key to the...
No.
To the
key was never found in the original.
Yeah, I don't think they ever found the key. But, yeah, they did find the key, and he just, like, looks at it, and he's just like, oh, isn't that, you know, a kick in the head? And I was like, oh, the universe hates me. So it's that kind of shit. But, yeah, so he's like, but like I said, other than that, it's very similar, but I don't think it's so similar that it didn't need to be made.
No.
And we were talking about it last night, because I said, you know, that's why I don't shit on, like, horror remakes. It's like, yeah, you know, they shouldn't rely on let's just remake the same fucking movies over and over all the time, because I like to see original ones, too. But I'm not averse to the idea in principle, as long as you're respecting the source material and you're kind of doing your own thing on it, your own thing with it, which I think this was. I think this was a good balance between respecting the original and doing enough different that, you know, there was something else in it. So it's not like, oh, well, if you saw one of them, you don't have to see the other one. I think it's interesting to watch them both and compare. And then another thing I was saying, too, was that in 1988... they did a remake of The Blob, which is fantastic.
It's been a long time since I've seen
that remake of The Blob. I think it was 88.
Yeah.
With Kevin Dillon was in it, right?
Yeah, it was around the time that they, what was it?
Man, that
Mars
was good.
Mars Attacks. I think not Mars Attacks. Around the time of one of the ones that the Martian Invasion. What was that one? Where they had the damn head in the damn bowl and shit, remember?
Well, I mean, Mars Attacks was the Tim Burton
movie. No, not that one. Before that one. Invaders from Mars.
Invaders from Mars?
Invaders from Mars.
Was that the Tobey Hooper one?
There was a remake around the late 80s. It was good, but I want to see that one again.
I haven't seen that one in a long time. I don't remember.
The little boy's parents got taken over.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I want to see that one too.
I remember that not doing very well.
No, it didn't. But I liked it. I saw it on HBO.
I'm pretty sure Tobey Hooper directed that.
Yeah.
Please correct me if I'm wrong.
But both movies are good. The basic theme is of survival horror, which is the essence of survival horror is the overturning of the normal social order in society, returning back to the animal order. You know, fucking dudes beating each other's asses, their station or color or socioeconomic, none of that matters. Only their abilities matter. The people that used to be the pariahs, you know, like the rednecks, they were kind of made fun of them, but fucking at the end of the movie, they're a huge army, a huge militia, and fucking Barbara, who's like, she was like a yuppie or intellectual or something, she's now joined them because they're out trying to damn save mankind against the zombie hordes, you know, and they're crude and crass and hanging the zombies up in trees and shooting them and shit, but none of that matters in the apocalypse, and both movies are basically an exploration of that, you know. Yeah, you could be a tough businessman from New York or whatever, and then the black office boy can still whip your ass and be right. So that's what survival horror was all about, if you ask me. That's the essence of it. The natural order. Who you are as a person.
And honestly, I have to say I kind of like the way the way Cooper ended in this one. I think that was a good ending.
Yeah, they gave him a worse ending, which
I know. Which he deserved
it, Cooper in this
fucker.
One is actually more of a dick than he was in the first one.
I mean, he was a big dick in the first one, but he was like an even more massive dick in this one.
Well, in this one, he was borderline killer. In the first one, he was an angry, grumpy coward, really.
Yeah.
Who was trying to protect his status, right? And didn't want to be told what to do by any other dude, much less a black dude.
Yeah.
And there's no way he's gonna live, and who was younger than him. So. Yeah. You know, no, he's just an asshole. But there are a lot of assholes like that, lots of them, you know. But it's all true life lessons, you know. That dudes like, that's the way it really is. That's what dudes are like that, you know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there. And even in this one where he's just like a huge, huge gaping anus dude, but it's still realistic. Because like I said, there are totally, I mean, you know, we've all encountered people like this.
Right. This version of Cooper, not only is he uncooperative because he's a coward and doesn't want to look bad and defends himself by lashing out, when you have a success around him, he actively tries to undermine you, to make you wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he didn't do that in the first one from what I remember.
I think he did, but I think it was more subtle.
More subtle. Okay.
It was more subtle.
Yeah, here it's a lot more obvious.
Yeah.
He got what's coming to him, though. He was the example of who not to be, definitely.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
In case of a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
At one point where, you know, the other kid, Tom, you know, the younger guy with the girlfriend, who's Judy Rose, that was her name?
Yeah.
And some of the zombies had, like, busted through the door that they had nailed up. And so, you know, Tom is over there, like, trying to hold the shit. And, you know, Cooper's over there just, like, looking at him.
Yeah, didn't want to help
him. And he's like, hey, you going to, like, help me out? Or
well, he was too scared. He was a coward. He was too scared.
And then finally he comes over. He's like, oh, here's the thing that you can put nails in. And I'm going back over here.
He was a coward. He couldn't admit it to himself that he was a coward.
Yeah, so he just had to be... So he had to go in the total opposite direction and be, like, really arrogant. Like why even bother doing that? That's not going to work. And all that other kind of shit.
Because he was scared shitless.
Yeah, big time. Mike says, this, The Thing, The Fly, and The Blob are some of the best remakes. Yeah, I would agree with all of those.
Yeah.
And I would really... I've really, really been hankering to, like, watch the remake of The Blob.
Because
I remember loving that.
I remember liking it. Do we ought to just buy it on DVD?
We should.
Something?
I remember actually seeing that in the theater and being, like, blown away. I mean,
I liked it.
Well, the thing about it, what the 50s
one... The original
one,
was good.
I mean, the 50s one is a classic, but it's kind of more of, like, a goofy...
It's dated,
almost like a comedy, kind of. I mean, it's, you know...
Oh, man, when I was a kid, they used to play that shit on the Saturday Monster matinees, and when that scene where that dude's falls into the mirror and he's fighting it in the blinds and it's on him. It scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, if you think about that really happening, I mean, that would be horrifying.
Yeah.
Being like, so the fact that they took it like in the 80s and they made it actually scary and they actually did, like, there's like, I remember the special effects and it being really good.
Yeah.
You know, so because like I said, as a concept, that's a really scary concept, like alien slime that could come there and like consume you.
Yeah, when the old hillbilly was out there and found the meteor and it went down a stick and it got on, I was like, oh no! Yeah, it was small when it got on him. It shit was totally believable. That one and The Thing are believable aliens.
Yeah,
if you ask me.
And like I said, probably the scariest kinds of aliens.
Yeah, because they're more like just creatures.
And you wouldn't be able to like
an alien amoeba that just fucking absorbs everything and gets bigger. Oh man.
Yeah, see, that would be like the worst.
Yeah.
That would only be a notch below The Thing.
Yeah, The
which
Thing
can like copy things.
The
perfectly.
Thing was the same thing, other than it could copy things and it had a mind and it could fucking steal brains and thought and make machines. Which makes it even worse, make it totally unbeatable. The blob was just an amoeba, it was just an animal.
Yeah, that just like
ate you. It was mindless.
It was just like,
yep.
Which, like I said, that's pretty horrifying.
It's got its own scariness to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, somebody said, Fourth Row Down said, the Dawn of the Dead remake has just been put up on Netflix. Any thoughts? Is this the 2004 one? Because honestly, I thought it was pretty damn good. I saw that in the theater as well.
2004.
I think that was 2004.
I gotta remember which one that was.
You probably have to
where they were on the roofs and they were talking between two buildings using the signs. Guy was in the gun shop.
I think so, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it. I saw it in the theater and I might have seen it one more time. But,
right.
No Need for Me Too says, such a solid performance from Mr. Todd. We're talking about 1998.
One of his best movies.
I mean, I love Tony Todd. I'll watch him in anything. But I had actually forgotten how good he was in this movie. Yeah. I mean, between this and Candyman, because Candyman came out like 2 years after this, I think. Yeah.
In his Candyman outfit, you can't get an idea of his physicality, especially at this point in time. He's tall, man. He's really tall. He's thin.
I didn't realize he was that tall either. But there was one shot in particular in the Night of the Living Dead remake where he's standing next to Barbara, like Patricia Tallman, and I was like, "Holy crap!"
He's like a whole foot. Looks like a foot taller.
He does look way taller than her.
And he's real thin, and he's a good-looking guy. And he's just—it's a shame we didn't get more of Todd back in his prime. And I don't want to say he's over the hill. I mean, shit, we saw some of his local fucking horror movies.
He was in Hatchet.
That one Hatchet movie, he was great in that. We just need to get more of Todd before, you know, while he's still with us, in the polite way. But
yeah,
he's not that old. We need more of him.
Because I feel like he's really, really underrated.
He's underrated.
Everything I see him in, he's like the best thing in it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, he's got a good voice.
That too. He's got like a real good charisma, like a real good screen presence. He has like a really good screen presence.
He was kind of a lot. He should have done a lot of the same stuff that James Earl Jones did. He's kind of like another James Earl Jones. It's just for some reason they didn't cast him. You know, they probably because they could get James Earl Jones probably. James Earl Jones was older, but you know what I mean. He still had that same impressive voice. I liked it. And he'd been really good in a Conan movie.
That's true.
Yeah. He could have been a Thulsa Doom.
Yeah, David June says the 2004 Dawn of the Dead was awesome. I remember it being like really, really good. Like I said, I saw it in the theater. I was kind of like skeptical, as I always am when I go see a remake. And I was like, why are you remaking Dawn of the Dead, really? But then when I went and saw it, I was like, all right, I'll allow it. That was actually pretty fucking good. You know, it's just that there's so many bad ones, bad remakes that, you know, remakes kind of get a bad rap, you know what I mean? I didn't even hate the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. It wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. Now, the Friday the 13th remake can suck a dick. That was really not good, but, you know. Spaniard said, I also saw this movie by accident while scrolling through the TV one late Saturday night. The movie really engaged you. Yeah, like the original one or the 1991, I don't know. Tony Todd was good in The Rock, too. Oh, shit, I forgot he was in that.
I forgot. Which one was The Rock?
Was that the one about Alcatraz? Not Alcatraz. What am I talking about?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, okay. I did, but it was like a long time ago. No Need for Me Too said, yeah, that era was notorious for casting way too old actors as teens. Yeah, we're talking about Steve McQueen in The Blob.
Steve McQueen, yeah.
Yeah, he's in high school. I'm like, how many times did he get held back?
Right, he's like 30.
He's like, he looked even older than that.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about that yesterday, how, and I, you know, it's kind of like a joke now because so many of these 50s teen movies, I mean, obviously, like, those actors were fucking, in their late 20s at the very least. And because people tended to look older than their age back then, just for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the hairstyles or the clothing or they had their lifestyle, like they didn't look as young or the plastic surgery wasn't as good, or I don't really know what it was, but every single time you see like teenagers in that, they're just very clearly, they look at like they're at least 35 years old.
Business says they're remaking Blade Runner again. No, they're not. They can't be remaking Blade Runner because they already made a sequel to it, and then that they were going to make a third one.
Yeah, I thought
that's
they were
just, what he's talking
maybe.
About.
And somebody said they were making another Ghostbusters. Honestly, I saw the preview for that,
it looks pretty
fun actually. Yeah. They're bringing back most of the original cast, but it's going to be, I think it's going to focus around Egon's granddaughter.
Yeah,
but it looks like they got Annie Potts, and it looks like they got
Zool and all the fucking original demons.
The dude from Stranger Things, the kid from Stranger Things. Well, he's not really a kid anymore, but you know, because he's like an older teenager now.
They're probably gonna bring back Gozer and fucking all the fucking demon dog things. Remember when fucking Rick Moranis turned into the demon dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. They should have.
Man, the original Ghostbusters is easily one of my favorite movies of the 80s. Yeah. I could watch that movie over and over and over again.
Yeah, I got the second one, too. It's not that.
The second one's still worth watching, but it's really not.
It's hard to beat that first
one. It's really hard to beat. Yeah, the first one was just so good that, I mean, and it's still funny. Like, the comedy is still funny. You know, it's just really, really tough act to follow, but yeah, so do we have anything else we need to say about...
No, yeah, I recommend both of them.
Yes, and somebody said that somebody had put a version up on YouTube for free of this.
Okay.
And like I said, you know, we found if you have an FYE in a mall or something like that, it looks like they're selling off the DVD for $5 because that's where I got it. And it's definitely worth watching, especially if you like a lot of George Romero films. Because like I said, George Romero actually did write the screenplay for this. It was based on his original screenplay with John Russo, and Tom Savini directed it, so, you know, can't really go wrong. Like, it's not super gory, so don't, like, expect it to be, like, a big gore fest, and it's pretty similar to the original, but they tweaked a couple of things, and it's totally good. Like I said, Tony Todd completely makes it worth watching, but everybody else is good in it, too. And I really, really like the dude that plays Cooper is just such a giant fucking... He's just such a giant dick. It's just fucking... He's really fun to watch. But not, like, over the top. He's not, like, a mustache-twirling villain or anything, but he's just... And the ending of what happens to him at the end is just really, really satisfying. I think we were watching it, and I was just kind of like, yeah! Because I had forgot that happened. All right, so we'll be back tomorrow talking about... I don't know what we'd be talking about. We'll either be talking about Squid Game, because we finished watching it last night, finally. Or we might watch something else and talk about that. We don't know. So we'll be back tomorrow. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by. Bye.